The News and Public Affairs Department of the Gordon Broadcasting Company presents Viewpoints, a program dedicated to the establishment of a better understanding between members of San Diego's white and Negro communities, and featuring the spontaneous, unrehearsed opinions and comments of San Diegans of all races. This program is presented each week at this time by KSDO Radio in the belief that only through a meaningful exchange of viewpoints can we dispel the unfortunate misunderstandings that too often exist between people of different religious and racial backgrounds. Your hosts on Viewpoints are the Reverend E. Major Shavers and Mr. Harold Brown, who appear as interested members of the Negro community. They invite your telephone comments and questions. The number to call is 234-8361. That's 234-8361. Now, your Viewpoints announcer, Reed Carroll.
Good evening. These are the ground rules for Viewpoint. First, we'll have the opening statements from the Reverend E. Major Shavers, then from Mr. Harold K. Brown, after which listeners are invited to call in and give their opinions, comments, or inquire as to questions which might be of importance to them. First, the Reverend E. Major Shavers, the minister of the Christian Fellowship Community Congregational Church of the United Church of Christ for the past 21 years. He's the past president of the San Diego chapter of the NAACP and is well known in San Diego for his deep interest in freedom and justice for his race. He believes in the implementation of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as the means of achieving the true American dream for all its citizens. And the Reverend Shavers is presently moderator of the San Diego County Association of the United Church of Christ. The Reverend Shavers.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Viewpoint. Last week we discussed freedom and the American Negro. This evening, we feel to avoid being accused of discrimination, equal time will be given to discuss freedom and the American white man. It is reasonable to assume that our love for liberty in America inextricably involves white and blacks alike in the fight for freedom, which is guaranteed every citizen in the United States under the Constitution. And because of our patriotism, many good Americans are distressed by a recent magazine poll showing that 70% of white people feel that the Negro is trying to move too high, too fast. These people obviously feel that passage of a few laws, important as they are, is removing the inequalities which exist in our society. It is interesting that only 4% of Negroes polled agree with them. Thus, it appears that there is an information gap between the whites, who feel Negroes are moving too high, too fast, and the 90% of Negro citizens who are only too well aware of the tragic discrepancies between the living standard of whites and Negroes because of the years of discrimination and neglect. Now, with this thought in mind, I must caution my white brother that there is, I believe, a familiar injunction which is a part of our religious heritage, which says, "Everyone to whom much is given of him will much be required." Now, this seems to be one of the demands for those who seek to hold the reins of authority and power. Mr. Whitney Young of the National Urban League concluded an editorial recently stating, "An affluent America cannot afford to sink into complacency and smugly agree that the Negro is moving too high, too fast. The figures are available for all to see, really, that the Negro is not moving at all. If democracy and justice have any meaning, America must move, and move quickly, to ensure that all of its citizens share equally in the fruits of our society. My viewpoint is that it is incumbent upon the white American who holds the reins of power to take the lead in the fight for freedom, if America is to remain strong and secure for all of its citizens. Thank you very much.
The Reverend E. Major Schaffers, co-host on Viewpoint, Mr. Harold K. Brown, a school teacher. This is his sixth year with the San Diego Unified School District, former civil rights activist who served as a core Western Regional Chairman and as local chairman. Mr. Brown is now director of the Self-Help Through Leadership Training, and he's on leave of absence from teaching at the present. Now, here is Mr. Harold K. Brown and his statement this evening.
Good evening. Last week, our topic was the role of black people in the fight for freedom. Tonight, our topic is the white man's role in the fight for freedom. This role, of course, will be discussed from two points of view. One point of view will be the role that the white man sees for himself. The other will be the viewpoints expressed through the eyes of black people. I say that the fight for freedom must be fought here in America as well as in foreign lands. The role of white people is to fight the good fight for freedom right here alongside black people. However, I doubt that it will be done because most white people see fighting for freedom in a foreign land as something totally different from fighting for freedom for black people here at home. What is your viewpoint?
This is Viewpoint, brought to you by the News, Research, and Public Affairs Division of the Gordon Broadcasting Company. And at this time, we invite your comments or questions on Viewpoint. The number to call, 234-8361. Your co-host on Viewpoint, the Reverend E. Major Schaffers and Mr. Harold K. Braun. This technical reminder, please turn your radio down, and as soon as you hear Viewpoint, begin speaking.
Before we take our first call, Reverend Schaffers, I would like to say to the listening audience this evening that 2 weeks from today, we will have as guests on our program, we will have as guests two persons from the Mexican community, and they will represent certain viewpoints as expressed by them, which will reflect the viewpoints, I am sure, of the Mexican community. So I want to make sure that the persons listening tonight will be sure and listen 2 weeks from now, and so they will get a chance to listen to some viewpoints as expressed by two persons from the Mexican community.
I think this is a policy that we should adopt, Mr. Brown, periodically, and having special guests from various walks of life, possibly a political scientist might be an interesting guest to have on this program later on.
Getting back to our topic tonight, the question is still in my mind why the fight for freedom in foreign lands is interpreted as something different from the fight for freedom in our land here in America. I wonder if you would say a few words as to what you feel about that.
Well, because, as I indicated in my editorial, the white man has elected to be the power influence in America, and so it is incumbent upon him to take the lead in the fight for freedom. For the past 10 years, for example, since the decision of the Supreme Court against the segregation in the public school system, the Negro has carried the fight for freedom to a very large extent, with the greatest opposition coming from the white power structure.
But do you think that white people in this country, generally speaking, white people in this country reach the point where they will throw all things aside and fight alongside black people in this country for freedom?
Yes, I think this would eventually happen, and more and more the white people of goodwill are becoming aware that America cannot be really free until all American citizens enjoy this freedom.
Then do you see that this is an indication today in the mood of 1966, we have something called the white backlash. Now, the white backlash is a reaction to the civil rights movement, a negative reaction, and it is a conservative stand taken by the white citizens of this country. Now, this white backlash seems to be nationwide. With this type of mood, doesn't this indicate that as long as black people continue their fight for freedom with any degree of militancy comparable to that which is expressed by this country in foreign lands in the fight for freedom, if we as black people do anything along those lines that compare with any type of militancy, then we get a reaction called white backlash?
Yes, I think the white backlash shows itself in the 70% that I mentioned in my editorial of people, white people, who feel that the Negro is moving too high, too fast. I'm not too sure that I understand exactly what he means by this. I've always felt that a general attitude of the white man has been that he felt that he had to move up in order to make room for the Negro, and I think this is wrong. The good, truly democratic way and the good American way for the power structure is to move over and make room for other Americans who are trying to enjoy the American dream.
Another example which indicates to me that white people in this country are not going to fight side by side along with black people is that take our Christian nation, the church, and the church seems to me that it would take the lead in the fight for freedom for all people all over the world. And in this country, it has been the tradition to have the church follow, if they move at all, to follow in the fight for freedom and to the fight against racism in this country. The Christian concept does not seem to be consistent when we are talking about the fight for freedom for black people in this country.
Well, Mr. Brown, as a minister, I must admit I am a little bit disappointed in the general attitude of white Christians. Now, with the exception of many courageous white ministers throughout the country that have risked their own reputation and the economic reprisals to express their deep convictions toward their black brothers. But I think the major criticism that I have is against the white Christian layman that is lacking in courage and in the true American spirit.
I believe we have a caller. Let's see if this is a call. Good evening, Viewpoint. Good evening, Viewpoint.
Yes, a message to Mr. Brown, please.
Yes. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Concerning the topic for tonight, I think the idea of the role of the white man in the fight for freedom, I think, personally speaking, I've tried to keep a touch. I try to keep in touch with the situation as it has gone thus far. And the white man has claimed superiority in various fields. He has claimed to be more or less the model of man. But I think when it comes to the fact of him actually as a whole putting himself into the struggle for the freedom of the minority in this country, I think it's impossible. Mainly because racism to the white man is almost like a religion. He has practiced it for so long, he has no other concept, I think, to exist. other than feeling that the black man in this country is less than human. He is a being of inferiority. And I think on these bases, he is no, there's nowhere, I think, in his system of thinking for change. I think this is the thing that he will carry down with the fall of this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you feel then that the white man will eventually reach the point where he will align himself with blacks in this country and fight against racism?
No. I would hope so. You know, I myself being a black man, I feel that I have certain resentment. Mm-hmm. But I have compromise in my heart. I figure that I can associate and more or less live with another being, you know,
mm-hmm.
if they offer me due respect. But with the white man himself, I think that he has become so obsessed with his idea of his personal superiority that he has drowned out any sense of reasoning to the point of actually putting full-fledged support into the fight for the black man. I think the black man's position of inferiority in this country is only a crutch to the white man to carry out his different things in life.
Well,
I think it's an ego booster.
Well, do you have any specific incidents to relate that what makes you feel this way? Do you have anything specific that really makes you think this way about white people?
I think, you know, even the ideal to me, to be specific, I would say taking the term white backlash.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have claimed that, many whites that is, have claimed that the reason they have taken this particular viewpoint or have created a so-called backlash is because of riots in the streets. Now, while little girls were being bombed in their churches, while civil rights workers were being shot down, the lash, there was no front lash of any degree that has been as effective as the backlash.
Mm-hmm.
Taking this into consideration, I figure that it is almost impossible to consider this man capable of realizing the injustices that are being put forth and actually taking direct action into curing them.
Oh.
Do you feel that the Negro should develop a lack of faith in the possibility of finally striking at least a compromise that you mentioned at the outset, that the white man is capable of reaching a compromise also? Don't you feel that he is aware of the urgency of America being a united America rather than divided?
I would hope, you know, and deep inside of me, I would hope that he feels this way. But from my experience, I think that the man, as a being, has gone too far in his feeling of supremism. He has gone to the point that I think that to me and to him, it is like a religion. It's something that he, if he put it down, it would he would fall. If he put that down, he would have nothing to stand on. As far as his ego is concerned, he would fall. I do not feel at this time that there is any compromise in the white man's heart. I figure that the only thing that he would compromise with is the point when he is brought to his knees.
We thank you, sir, that you have expressed your viewpoint very clearly.
Yes, thank you for letting me express it.
Tonight's topic on Viewpoint, the white man's role in the fight for freedom. This is KSTO, Radio Isle 1130, and we invite your comments and questions on Viewpoint. Just call 234-8361. Once again, your co-host, Reverend E. Major Shavers and Mr. Harold K. Brown.
I wanted to take this opportunity again to remind our listening audience that 2 weeks from tonight, we will have two representatives from the Mexican community to share this program with us and express their viewpoints on selected topics.
Mr. Brown, this may not be exactly related to the white man's role for freedom, but recently, this week, I might say, the the demonstrations and the in Hollywood. I have watched and listened very carefully the outcome of this disturbance there. No one has been arrested. No one has been thrown in jail or even shot. Have there been any attempt to call out the National Guard? What is your opinion?
Well, to my knowledge, there was no calling out of the National Guard. You know, in this country today, there is a very tenseness between black people and white people. Today, we have a situation where in the so-called black ghetto, if a group of black people congregate, it seems to arouse a lot of attention from the police department, a lot of suspicion. However, if the same situation exists in the white community, it does not arouse the same amount of suspicion. So, during this time of tenseness, when you have a situation develop where people are engaged in some activities such as fighting or something like this, if it happens in the black community, you can almost bet that it will be called a riot and things will begin to happen. If it happens in the white community, it would just be a disturbance.
Well, where does the responsibility rest?
Well, that's been one of the chief faults of our country. And I just pointed out before that, you know, Christianity has not taken the lead. The church has not taken the lead. The church has sat back and let this exist for all these years. Racism just runs rampant. And the church does not take any stand of any militant degree. And so you have leadership there. And that when the leadership fails to take advantage of a situation, when leadership fails to really set the moral tone for society, such as political leaders, such as religious leaders, when they refuse to take a stand, and a firm stand, against actions of discrimination based on race, then you just open the door for all types of behavior, and you open the door for racism to just continue and continue, perpetuated by the lack of leadership.
Yes, but most white people that you talk to, they're anxious, apparently, that we have peace and unity in our country. And when these riots and demonstrations occur, they seem to look with suspicion upon the Negro's motive. And while at the same time, there was no real concern expressed by Los Angeles. I noticed that the mayor went out and spoke words of reprimand and kind of slapped the kids on the hand, so to speak. But it wasn't the same situation that erupted in other areas of our state.
Yes, and before I remark on that, let's take a call. Good evening. Viewpoint?
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Say, I think it would be good if you would clarify to the audience the social and cultural reasons of prejudice themselves, because everybody's aware of the civil strife, but they don't know of, the basic causes of it throughout the South, mainly in the low socioeconomic white people. You know how they pass it on from to their children?
Yes.
And other words, they teach them their own prejudice and views.
Yes.
And the education angle has never been brought forth that until these people of the low socioeconomic class, their children are educated to realize that see, their fathers and mothers don't have a chance to for any more economic gain, and actually they're afraid of colored people gaining status above them. And until these children are educated, why this prejudice will keep existing. But these points are never brought forth.
Yes.
And people are usually in ignorance of the facts.
Yes, I agree. And first, we have to understand that prejudice is a prejudgment, mm-hmm. and the prejudgment, which is not based on fact. And you're absolutely right. It passes down from generation to generation based on things such as fear, and power is a part of it. And the fear is really something that is very strong among the lower class white.
Well, that's mainly where your prejudice is built. Your middle class and upper class is not so much so. But then, on the other hand, there are so many of them that other people have to conform to their thoughts, or their, you know, they have no choice. But until these, the thing is, the education has never been brought forth in all your mass communication media. And this is really a shame, because until this is brought out, well, there will always be this strife.
Yes, I agree. The mass media certainly has the responsibility to educate our country and to solve this racial problem. And also the schools. Now, with as long as de facto segregation exists in our school system, and we have this dual system in our society, that we are always going to have these prejudices exist.
But, Mr. Brown, the American white man is in control of our educational system by and large. He is in control of the police department.
He has the power, you mean?
Yes. And I think you would agree, and I think that most of us would, that he is the richest man in the world, and claims to be the best educated man in the world. And then why is it that he has to be educated to know what the other person feels, especially a person like himself, only with a black skin? We have been exposed to the same system of education, the same economy, only the black man doesn't share equally with him.
Yes, but see, you're talking about the white power structure. The white power structure is way up here somewhere in the air. Down below that is just ordinary white people who are victims of the power structure, you see. And so these people below the power structure, white people, are not educated as to what the power is that exists, and they are not educated as to how to eliminate the fears of prejudice and so forth.
Yes, but Mr. Brown, until the man up beyond the 16th floor speaks with power and authority, the masses down beneath will continue to go and act the way that they are acting today.
Yes, but the masses are the greatest power once they realize that.
That's the point I'm trying to bring out.
Yes.
That unless a person takes a certain sociology course or a social psychology course, they don't actually know anything about what's going on. And there's many organizations today, but they're taking entirely the wrong approach. They should start educating the masses through the media instead of through all demonstrations that things are good. But until the mass media understands the social structure and why your prejudice is based on your cultural reasons, through education alone is the only way that they can overcome this. But no one seems to approach the media on it. The masses remain ignorant of the fact.
Yes, I think the approach has been made to the mass media, for instance, but it just does not come out to the extent that it should. And of course, one of the best place to conduct this education is in our educational institutions, from the primary grades on up.
That's right, but it doesn't exist.
No, it sure doesn't. And we certainly need our political leaders to take this and to do something about it. And we thank you very much for expressing your viewpoint, sir.
Okay.
Good night.
This is Viewpoint, presented by the Research and Public Affairs Division of the Gordon Broadcasting Company. We invite your comments and questions on Viewpoint. Just call 234-8361. Once again, your co-hosts, the Reverend E. Major Shavers and Mr. Harold K. Brown.
Good evening, Viewpoint.
Howdy.
Yes.
I didn't make it last week. I'm repeating to the remark made by the gentleman Irishman.
Yes.
That he said that he's going to be a taxpayer soon, and he went and got it, and his father went and got it, and his grandfather went and got it.
Oh, you mean last week?
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, I'd like to remind the gentleman and so many others that they were not forbidden to walk on a sidewalk.
Yes.
They were not forbidden to drive to ride in a trolley car.
That's right.
Later, they were forbidden to drive, to ride in the front of the trolley car or a bus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that isn't it all. I know I want to remind Mr. and Mrs. Society, High Society, that they made their nest too high.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm repeating to something that I've seen in my staying in West Palm Beach, Florida. It's a mile and a half from the Northwoods on West Palm Beach, a mile and a half from Palm Beach itself. Now, all the surrounding of the Northwoods, there's beautiful homes, beautiful streets, shrubberies, and so on and so on. But the colored people, they live in a dilapidated section, busted sidewalks, busted streets, and for good measure, there is a two big cesspool tanks running open at the Northwoods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Mr. and Mrs. High Society, it mind the smell, because they do smell it once in a while too.
Yes.
Instead of a stop in the streets when they come to the neighborhood of the colored man, go through the street, pave it.
Yes.
The sidewalks, don't stop just because on that street the colored man and colored woman lives there. Fix the sidewalk, go through. Don't cry today that somebody starts a riot. This is to be blamed on all the officers that the public elects, from the street cleaner to the governor of the state. How about the councilmen, senators, congressmen, the mayor of the city, the board of supervisors, the city attorney, the city administrator, and Mr. Brown's to come? Why don't they see to it that these streets go through, no matter who lives in it?
Yes.
And the sidewalks the same.
Yes, and
now, they made their nest too high, believing that nobody's going to reach them. But when the tornado or a hurricane or a twister comes, it don't make any bit of difference how high they go.
Okay, sir. We're going to try to get some more people in and express their viewpoints. And we thank you for expressing yours. Good night. Good evening. Viewpoint.
Hello. Can I give my opinion?
Yes.
I would like to talk about Proposition 14 and another point. The first point I wanted to bring up was the young man called just earlier. He said that the American white man had hate and contempt in his heart for the
Sir, are you going to get around to talking about the role of the white man with your remarks?
Well, I'm having trouble here. Just want to cut it off, Lori.
All right, but our topic this evening is the role of the white man in the fight for freedom, and we want to keep our remarks as closely to that topic as possible.
I see. Well, what I meant to say is he said that I just was outraged by the point that he said that we all hated you, and that, to me, was outrageous. And as far as the white man's role in this problem today, I would like to say that the a classic example of what is happening here is what happened in Proposition 14, where the real estate people told us that a man should have his right to sell the property to whoever he pleases.
Yes.
However, this whole thing was against the law that was banning people from selling property to whoever they please. Well, this is what I mean. There are certain real estate clauses in some real estate contracts which state that a person because of whoever he bought the property from before him, cannot sell it to the Negro race.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular law would have put that one off. So essentially, it would have made more people free to buy the property and sell property as they please. And I think that it's a good thing your program is on the air, because it's the basic ignorance that these points just don't seem.
Yes, we're still there. Sorry.
Well, what do you think about what I said, or did you understand it?
Would you give that last part that you...
Yeah, I think I talked too complicated about that. Basically, there are real estate clauses in some real estate contracts which state that whoever buys this property cannot sell it to any members other than the Caucasian race.
Yes.
I know about these. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, the Rumford Act would have made most of these illegal. And here Proposition 14 was making, the Rumford Act illegal. So it seems to me sort of a hypocrisy, because...
The argument
that they used that people cannot sell to whoever they please, I think that was a farce.
Yes, before the reversionary clause was the restrictive covenant.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, now my viewpoint is that all of the difficulty that we've had in America... can be solved overnight, just as soon as the power structure of the white man decides that he wants to be truly American and truly Christian.
Well, I think to a degree that would be true, but it's also impossible. It's true and simultaneously impossible, because the power structure is complex. It's made up of too many men and too many views, and it just can't all of a sudden, turn over a new leaf overnight. If the problem is to be solved, it's going to have to be done by goodwill by very many people.
Yes, we have 100 million so-called Christians in America, though.
Yes, and they don't seem to be colorblind, do they?
and the Christian concept, then, isn't so strong as to influence behavior, then, is it?
Well, then you're saying the one of the biggest wrongs is that the white church doesn't seem to see through the wrong that's being committed here?
Well, I don't know if they see through it. The fact is they don't do much about it.
Well, that could be true, and I think it's also changing. And in fact, especially in San Diego, there are many clergies that have been doing more around the Negro race and all this. I'd like to make a comment. It's kind of a plug more than anything else, and that's for Sammy Davis Jr. I think he's done more to help the Negro race, from my point of view, anybody, because there's so many people that go up there and for the first time they see a black man entertaining and they start appreciating that guy.
Yeah. How many jobs have Sammy Davis Jr. helped black people to get?
I'd say quite a few.
I don't know. I'm asking. I would judge it on that basis.
Magazine, and he has stated about, well, it sounds to me like about 6 or 7 entertainers have their jobs, or Negro entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned a few by names, but I don't remember them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were... people that were going to make it anyway, but
yes.
He just helped them, right like that.
Yes, I would hope that he has. I don't know. That's why I asked the question. I don't judge just because I happen to see one black person who is successful and who has come into a large amount of money through his success. I must judge him on the basis of what he does to help solve racism. Now, he could become rich and be the biggest Uncle Tom around, but if he really does something, regardless of his money, if he does something to eliminate racism, then I really respect and admire that person.
I think the Negro people, and maybe yourself included, not for sure though, have yelled Uncle Tom just a little bit too soon in many cases, because there are, you hear this about Martin Luther King, and if he's done the Negro man any harm in any way, I'd like to know about it. I just can't visualize it.
I agree that many black people do yell Uncle Tom too soon. I would agree with that.
If I have time, I'd like to talk about another point. You see, after Watts and all this, they get all these sociologists in there, it seems to me anyway, that they get all these sociologists in there, and they're going to discover the problems for poverty. And then they go back home and they write the big papers and all, and they come out with all this. This is my opinion or how I see it. This may not be exactly as it happens. But it seems to me, and I'll agree this is a touchy point, that these people have never touched on the ideas of, how do we say it, motivation and pride and things like that. They seem to be trained, and I'm using the word liberal here, by liberals, and so they just whenever a point like this comes up, it seems that they think that they're going to be belittling the Negro people by saying these things, so they leave them out of the problem altogether. And I think this is wrong. I think the problem is omnipotent, you know, that all these things are in there, and they all have to be solved. And they're and by not saying them, they're trying to say that the Negro will never be motivated.
So, sir, could I ask you a question?
I wish you would.
What would be your viewpoint as to the white man's role in the fight for freedom now, directly?
Well,
what should the white man be doing that, and in your opinion, and your as far as your viewpoint is concerned?
He should be looking at the problems, and he should be looking all the way through them. He shouldn't be looking at them with a conservative viewpoint or a hate viewpoint or a black or white viewpoint. He should be trying to solve real problems that are facing our people today, and they're big.
Okay, we thank you very much for expressing your viewpoint.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
This is KSTO, Radio Isle 1130. Tonight's topic on Viewpoint, the white man's role in the fight for freedom. We invite your comments and questions on Viewpoint. The number to call, 234-8361. And once again, your co-hosts, the Reverend E. Major Shavers and Mr. Harold K. Brown.
I'd like to remind the listening audience again that 2 weeks from tonight, we will have two representatives from the Mexican community who will discuss with us their viewpoints on selected topics for that evening. Tonight the topic we are discussing is the white man's role in the stride for freedom, and many times we get off the topic slightly, and we want you, the listening audience, to bear with us. So, Reverend Shavers, do you have any words of wisdom on this topic?
Well, I think that, by and large, that we have discussed many things that that's related to the white man's role in the fight toward freedom. And I recognize that this is a very difficult thing, at least for the majority, to commit himself. Because I think we all know what the role is. And we know what the Negro's role in his fight for freedom. It is the recognition, first, that every person is a human being, has certain aspirations and desires. And when those aspirations and desires are inhibited, then, of course, the real incentive goes with it. And I'm afraid that this is a part of the psychology of racism.
Okay, let's take one last call. Good evening, Viewpoint.
Yes, Viewpoint.
Yes, go ahead.
My view to Mr. Brown and Reverend Shavers.
Yes.
I think there's been a lax on our community, as you said some time ago. Some of our religious leaders and some of our better stated citizens, such as lawyers and doctors. I was speaking with a minister here some time ago, and his theory was that religious members and leaders should not get involved in racial controversy.
Mm-hmm.
And since the riots and all the other upheavals, they had suggested that we stay clear of these sort of upheavals. Matter of fact, I was talking to one gentleman, and he said that he disagreed with Reverend Shavers in every way because he was a religious minister and he didn't think that he should get involved into these controversies, you see.
Well, I could hardly. Did you say that Reverend Shavers feels that he shouldn't be involved in this kind
another
of thing?
Minister.
Beg pardon?
Another minister of our flock made this statement. Another preacher, as a matter of fact.
Well, I would certainly feel that the place of the minister is where the problems are,
right.
Whether they are racial, whether they are economic, or political.
Right. Yes. And I have a viewpoint for Mr. Brown.
Yes.
I think that civil rights has been the grand deception of our time.
Deception?
Yes.
All right. Would you explain that briefly, please?
You take, for instance, now, our national product is $730 billion.
Yes.
And yet we have the highest unemployment among the Negro people of any time in history in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, civil rights has been practiced by people who haven't believed in putting God first, in other words.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Well, it's evident that this has been formulated around this situation, you see.
Well, Reverend Martin Luther King is a minister, and he has been very deeply involved in civil rights.
Well, yes, for Mr. King's part. But
well, there are other ministers, too, and I know a lot of them. I know many other people who are involved in civil rights who are very religious and attend church just as regularly as our great outstanding Christians. Sir, we have run out of time tonight. Would you call next week and we might continue this part of our discussion? We thank you for calling. We are enjoying this program, and as we usually enjoy the program, Viewpoint, but we have run out of time again. So this is Harold Brown.
I'm E. Major Shavers.
Saying thanks for calling in and talking with us, and we'll see you next week.
This has been Viewpoint, a platform for discussion of the problems of our times, a program designed with the goals of bringing greater understanding to the people of San Diego through an interchange of viewpoints and attitudes. Next Thursday night, due to Thanksgiving, Viewpoint will not be heard. Be sure to tune in for Viewpoint 2 weeks from tonight when KSDO's Research and Public Affairs Department returns with Viewpoint and its co-host, the Reverend E. Major Shavers and Mr. Harold K. Brown.